Hi, I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insight, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. On this episode of Pharmacy Focus, we spoke with Laura Gilseppi about the impact of pharmacist-led interventions on healthcare-associated C. diff rates. To start, what was the focus of your paper published in the March 2024 issue of Pharmacy Practice in Focus Health Systems and presented at the Peggy Lillis Foundation's 2024 National C. diff Advocacy Summit?
So the article that we published and the talk that we just gave really focused on how a pharmacist-led interventions can really impact the amount of C. diff that occurs in a hospital or healthcare setting. Basically, some key interventions that we discussed were making sure that we are setting guidelines for a healthcare system. So looking not only at what are national guidelines for how to treat some disease states, but looking at your own healthcare system and what types of infections you have, what your patient population is, and what your susceptibility rates are. So the susceptibility rates at our healthcare institution may be different from somebody who's in a more rural setting or who's in a big city. So you have to know what your type of population is. So once you know that, basically marrying those guidelines together and knowing your patient population, and then looking at what patients have certain allergies. So knowing what the top drugs are that you want to give to somebody and what are some things that are going to prohibit you from giving those antibiotics. So if a patient, for example, has allergies, then you want to investigate those a little further. Sometimes it's just speaking with the patient and asking them what their allergies are. And sometimes it's doing an allergy test to clarify what they are, so that we can give the most appropriate antibiotics that we need to give. And then also highlighting those infectious disease states where we mistreat the most. So looking at UTIs and how do we treat those most appropriately, or community-acquired pneumonia. Are we giving the right antibiotics? Are we following the guidelines appropriately? And then setting those guidelines for providers to look at their hospital and making sure that we're following those. Another thing that we did was looking at beta-lactam allergies and doing education on those and making sure that providers know that, hey, if you have a patient who has an allergy to penicillin, it doesn't mean that you can't give any penicillin antibiotics anymore. It doesn't mean that you have to stay away from the whole class of cephalosporins either and go to something much more broad spectrum and maybe more toxic like clindamycin or the fluoroquinolones, or even really talking really broad spectrum like carbapenems. You can still potentially give a penicillin or a cephalosporin. And classically, we give those because they have the most efficacious outcomes for patients. They kill the most rapidly. And are oftentimes the safest for our patients. So we want to make sure that really getting down to the bottom of what allergy do you have, and then you can still give another cephalosporin or another penicillin if you have an allergy, looking at what are the cross-reactivities, what are the chemical structures of each of the antibiotics, and making sure that we're educating on that. Another thing that we did was if a patient we believe truly did have an allergy to a certain medication, we can do allergy testing. So at our particular institution, we implemented penicillin skin testing. And if a patient says, hey, I had an allergy and this is what it was, and they qualify, then we'll give them a penicillin allergy test and see if, in fact, they do have an allergy. So 10 to 20% of the U.S. population believes that they have a true allergy, and less than 1% actually does it in any one given time. So we've done a lot of allergy testing, and I can count on one hand as to how many patients actually truly did have an allergy. So it's pretty cool that we can get rid of that and debunk the allergy. The last thing that we did was we decreased our fluoroquinolone use. And again, a lot of our fluoroquinolone use comes from the misconception that a patient has an allergy and actually can't take other antibiotics. So then we end up giving them a fluoroquinolone. So one of the things that we did was we did an MUE and we looked at medication use evaluation and we looked at why are prescribers using fluoroquinolones? Are they appropriate? They are appropriate in some instances. They have a very good need at some times, but other times we're just giving them because of the allergies, and then we're saying, okay, well, we'll just give them this because they're allergic to everything else that we want to give. So really looking at deep down, what is the reason for it? And then decreasing fluoroquinolone use actually decreases C. diff rates. One of the cool things is that they actually can cause one of the most toxigenic forms of C. diff, the O27 strain or ribotype. So by decreasing the rate of use of fluoroquinolones, we're actually decreasing not only C. diff rates, but also the most toxigenic strains as well.
In your opinion, why is it important to highlight the impact of pharmacist-led interventions on healthcare-associated C. diff rates?
Yeah, so I think there is a misconception that only infection preventionists, who are the nurses in the hospitals, making sure that we're utilizing proper hand hygiene and we're making sure that we're properly sanitizing patient rooms and making sure we don't spread from one patient to the next different disease states. And I think that there is a misconception that that's what it is that stops C. diff. Really, the risk of C. diff really occurs most of the time when we overuse or inappropriately use antibiotics. And who better to stop the inappropriate use than a pharmacist? So pharmacists basically see every single order that comes through a healthcare system, right? Because a physician writes for a prescription, and then the pharmacist reviews it, makes sure it's okay, and then we verify it. So we have this unique ability to really look at every single antibiotic or prescription that comes through. So we can analyze every single thing that comes through, and we have the expert of medications, right? You know, that's what we have been trained to do. So we know very intimately and intricately which antibiotics or which medications in general have the highest risk for causing C. diff. And making sure that we're not developing it and producing these super bugs when we don't need to. So we have a really unique role in the healthcare system in being able to do that.
What is the focus of your work as an antimicrobial stewardship pharmacist in a health system in Indiana?
So as I said, I work really closely with our infection preventionists. You know, we work hand in hand. She does one thing to decrease or prevent C. diff, and I do another thing. And together, we kind of have the synergism that we're working together and providing this. I have also talked about how I work really closely with our dietitians and our microbiologists. And, you know, you might kind of think, well, what does that have anything to do with anything, right? Well, we put together with the dietitian and myself, we put together a pamphlet for our patients who we send home on antibiotics or they're in the hospital. And we educate how can we really protect our gut microbiome. So that's our good gut flora. When we give antibiotics, we're killing that good gut flora off, and it's setting the perfect stage for a C. diff infection or other infections to set in. So we put together something that really promotes the use of prebiotics and probiotics, which are in foods. So that's the healthier version than, you know, going, can I go to the pharmacy and get in pill form? That's a good probiotic. I get asked that question a lot. And really the safest, most efficacious way of getting pre or probiotics is by our eating good, healthy foods. So prebiotics are basically foods that feed our good gut flora. They're already in our body. That's the type of flora that we want the most. So we feed them by giving them, for example, different fibers. Hummus or chickpeas are really good. You've got your fruits and vegetables with the skin on them. So giving those is restoring and keeping our gut healthy, what we already have. Then after we take our antibiotics, we're killing off those good gut flora. So how can we replace them safely? Well, you can have foods that are fermented or have a probiotics, for example. So you've got your kefir, you've got your kombucha, you've got your Greek yogurts, and those are restoring what microbes you might have already killed off and putting them back into place. So you know, utilizing those together. So that's the work I've done with some dietitians. The work I do with microbiologists, I can't even speak highly of how much their work is so important. We depend on the microbiologists to keep up to date with the guidelines and what the susceptibility rates are versus the microbes that have grown out. We're each other's checks and balances and making sure we're up to date with all of our guidelines. So they provide us with an antibiogram, which is basically all of our hospital's microbes that grew out for the past year, and then what are the susceptibility rates, again, making sure that they're following the most up-to-date breakpoints and knowing which antibiotics will work best for our patient population. And so all that work together kind of comes together to keep our patients healthy and safe. And, you know, you really kind of wouldn't know that all that stuff is going on in the background. But that's how we're making sure our patients have good, effective care.
Do you feel that the impact pharmacists can have on antimicrobial stewardship is broadly understood by patients and other healthcare providers?
No, I don't think so. Well, let me start with the patients. So I shared a story recently of how when I go in and talk to a patient, let's say they have a penicillin allergy and our physician thinks that they need to prescribe something more broad spectrum or, you know, more toxic, because that's what oftentimes happens because they have this penicillin allergy. And I'll say, okay, hold on just a second. We're going to put a pause on this. I'm going to go talk to the patient and find out what their allergy is. And you'd be surprised as to how many times the patient's kind of like, wait, who are you? You're not my nurse. You're not my physician. Who is this person? Classically, the pharmacist sits in the basement of a pharmacy in the hospital. That's where the pharmacy is. And we just kind of do our computer work and we don't talk to patients, right? So it's kind of funny when I do come and talk to them, they're like, wow, I've got my own pharmacist that's coming to talk to me. And I think they really enjoy the conversation. So they start talking about all their medications. But when we talk about their allergies and what it implies in their healthcare and how we're going to actually be able to treat them, they're just amazed by it. So I think they're just starting to learn as, you know, we provide that education, and hopefully sometimes their family members or their friends are in the room too, and I can kind of educate them at the same time. I love that. So I think we're not there yet with the patients, but we're really starting to impact that. And then with the providers, again, we're really working on that. I think what's been really cool over the past few years is we have had these initiatives that we're implementing, and sometimes they just kind of like, okay, we'll do what you say, Laura. But in the end, they see the impact, and results and data are really what drives providers in the end, right? So they're going to see, oh my gosh, we really did that. That's what we were able to accomplish. And so then they start trusting in what we can do as pharmacists and antimicrobial stewards. And they say, okay. And sometimes now I find them coming to my office and seeking me out and asking questions. So what should I do with this patient? I have this type of patient. What should we do about it? They've got this allergy. What do we do, Laura? So that's pretty cool. So I think they are starting to learn what we can provide for them.
Your paper showed that pharmacist-led interventions addressing healthcare-associated C. diff rates decrease C. diff-associated all-cause mortality. How did this occur, and what are the potential impacts of these findings if applied to other healthcare systems?
So I just remember the CDC always putting out these antimicrobial resistance threats publications and reading about it, and the impact or how much C. diff contributes to morbidity and mortality of patients. And I don't know why, it's always clung to me. I've always thought, gosh, everything that we do, we really need, all of our impact really boils down to the end of, are we creating resistant organisms, and are we just creating these monster bugs, super bugs, right? And then eventually it leads to C. diff. And then it can lead to mortality, death of patients. So it's always been a goal of mine to make sure that we are really focused on that at our healthcare system and making sure that we're decreasing those rates. So we can decrease the risk of C. diff, obviously, by making sure that we've got proper hand hygiene and, you know, all the things that an infection preventionist does, but also making sure that when we treat a patient who does truly have an infection that we need to use an antimicrobial for, we're using the most effective antibiotic, the most narrow spectrum, for the shortest duration possible, so that, again, we're not creating this vicious cycle where we use an antibiotic, we create a superbug, and then we have to, next time they get infected, now we have to treat the superbug, which means broader antibiotics, longer duration of time, And then guess what happens? Then they get C. diff, and then it's, you know, a cycle. So just making sure that we're stopping that cycle and knowing that the ultimate outcome is the C. diff and the superbugs, and making sure we're just stopping that.
What are some of the financial benefits of having a pharmacist focus on antimicrobial stewardship efforts in a healthcare system?
So I sometimes don't like talking about the economics because I really like focusing on the clinical care of a patient. But economics is very important, especially if I want to have my job, right? So it is very important to look at. So one of the things that we did highlight in the paper is basically what does a C. diff, a case of C. diff cost the healthcare system. Now this is very, very old data. You know, it was around $17,000. And I think that this is a 2015 study showing that. So if you think that it's at least double, at least maybe even triple that in nowadays, you know, I can't even imagine it. It probably is at least 30, probably somewhere between 30 and 50,000 by the time that you're causing increased treatments, increased hospital length of stay. Sometimes the patients have to come in because they haven't been treated effectively. So now they're coming back into the healthcare system. So the economics is astronomical. And so just looking at mortality rates alone or the treatment of C. diff, you're looking at a whole stewardship pharmacist position right there that, you know, of the money that you've saved. And sometimes it's a little bit hard, I think, to wrap our minds around because oftentimes in a healthcare system, we're like, well, how much money is this bringing in, right? So, but a stewardship pharmacist actually saves the money. So you're not bringing in money. You can't actually see it. You're just not spending it. So sometimes that's a little bit of a hard concept, you know, if you think about it. Other ways that we save money, this is something kind of small, if you will, but so we look at all of the ways that we dose our antibiotics. So let's take cefepime, for example. So when we dose cefepime, the traditional dosing of that is 2 grams Q8 hours, okay? So you're thinking about 2 grams times three times a day. So you've got 6 grams a day. So you think about how much 6 grams cost. So we have looked at pharmacokinetic data, which basically looks at how does it treat the patient more effectively at a similar type dose, but giving it more often, but less of a dose. And it has similar efficacy. So if you give 1 gram Q6 hours, well, you're given 4 grams a day instead of 6. So guess what the hospital sees? Ooh, you just saved us some money. But really in the end, yes, we did. But in the end, we actually saved the patient from getting extra unnecessary antibiotics. They didn't get 2 grams extra each day that they're on it. So it saves their gut a little bit, right? We're restoring their microbiome. And it's actually less toxic for the patient as well. So same efficacy, less cost, less toxicity, and it's a win-win-win. So those are a couple ways that we can economically save in the healthcare system.
How can pharmacists help patients address issues pertaining to the financial toxicities of treatment and care?
So I've worked closely with one of the drug reps that for one of the treatment options of C. diff, which is called fidaxomicin. And a lot of healthcare systems actually don't carry fidaxomicin because of its cost. It is way more expensive than the typical treatment of oral vancomycin, which is okay to use in some settings. But if a patient has higher risk for recurrence, for example, we want to use something like fidaxomicin because it has a lower recurrence rate. In our hospital, I advocated basically for us to carry it and use it in a select subset of patients who are higher risk. And then when the patient goes home, they can't afford it, I have reached out to one of the drug reps who has worked with, so I basically got them and the case managers together, and I was kind of just working, having them meet together and helping them collaborate to see how we can better give coverage for patients so that they can get it at home, because it is very costly. So whether let's say they don't have insurance at all, we help them get insurance. If the problem is that they just can't afford it, sometimes we help give them some money to be able to afford it. Obviously, that's not a popular with the hospital at sometimes, but it is an option because, you know, look, the other option is, okay, do you want the patient to come back in and now we're going to treat them again and it's going to cost the healthcare system? So you have to think about, okay, which one might be a little bit cheaper? Let's get them out the door. Let's get them home, safe and home, and get them the appropriate treatment or do you want to give them maybe subpar treatment and then they're going to be right back here and they're going to have another, you know, week or two hospital stay again. So really kind of making sure that everybody's understanding. So I think that's a unique rule that us, we as pharmacists can make and say, hey, we know it's going to happen if we don't treat them appropriately. So let's get on the ball and let's get them appropriate treatment. I think really giving a lot of our patients, just healthcare or insurance in general, is a big help, because I think a lot of our patients really just don't have that insurance to be able to help pay for it. So that's been a big help.
What else do you see on the horizon for potential interventions, pharmacist-led or otherwise, to support antimicrobial stewardship?
So one of the biggest interventions that we've really talked about and hit home on is the allergies, right? So making sure that we're getting patients an accurate allergy history. So when they come into the healthcare system, basically at our hospital, they're already really sick, right? So sometimes we've missed our opportunity to be able to allergy test them or ask them questions. So one of my goals right now is making sure that in the outpatient setting, when they are hopefully healthier or just going in for a routine PCP visit, their regular doctor, making sure that we're screening them appropriately and we're actually acknowledging their allergy instead of just glossing over it. Oh, are you still allergic to penicillin? Great, now let's move on. But really stopping and saying, hey, what happened? Why do you have an allergy? What is it exactly that happened? And would you consider getting testing? So one of our physician network sites, we're going to start allergy testing. I'm really excited about that so that we can get that allergy off the chart before they come into the hospital. So right away we can treat them appropriately and effectively instead of having to wait and do allergy testing at the hospital. So that's probably one of the biggest things. Another one that I'm working on, this is going to seem weird, but one of the most over-treated and inappropriately treated disease states is UTIs. So just doing education on that, both for the public and for our healthcare professionals, making sure that we know the true symptoms of a UTI and not over-diagnosing it, is actually really key. We can do a whole talk on that one itself. but yeah, just really kind of focusing on that disease state is really something that we're really focusing on at the moment.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.